Vayihyu chayei sara mea shana v'yasrim shana v'sheva shanim shenei chayei sara.
OU Israel presents
in. Welcome.
Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Chayei Sara. Recording. Not first broadcast yet, but recording. Unusual is Leil Chamishi, the eve of Thursday, which means in English Wednesday night. But Leil Chamishi, already in Hebrew, will be the 20th of Mar Cheshvan, corresponding the Wednesday to the 16th of November, the 20th of Mar Cheshvan in the, the year 5752. I'm a little giddy. It's late at night. But we're trying to do this a little bit early this week, just as an experiment. And we will be talking about Chayei Sara. Before that, let me talk about rain. But before that, let me say Tehillim Kuf Lamed Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tehiena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Imavonot tishmor yo Adonai mi ya'amod ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, haomedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziem mitzara lirvacha umeyafela laora, umishibud legeula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv, v'nomar amen. Speaking of captivity, which that Achenu kol beit Yisrael did, we started a new feature in Torah Tidbits, so to speak, a little box which says Jonathan Pollard 9,491 days in captivity. I realize I left out the word days. I'll have to change it for next week. 9,491 days in captivity. And it has a website, www.jonathanpollard.org. This is the English version of the larger Hebrew page website for the release of Jonathan Pollard. But if you go into that site, jonathanpollard.org, and click on the summary of his case, I don't remember exactly what the feature was called, you will get a list of over 50 points. Very short, 1, 2, 3, very straightforward, no emotion. The emotion comes from reading what's written there and just trying to get your mind around the unbelievable injustice and duplicity that combined from a lot of different people and a lot of governments to keep Jonathan Pollard in jail. So I recommend the website Jonathan Pollard, one word, .org. On the lighter side of things, last week I sort of announced a competition asking people to email me at tt.ou.org if they could identify the theme, TV theme song that opened each half of the show. I got several correct answers to the opener from last week. It was from My Three Sons. One fellow said he has three sons and he hums the, quote, Nigun often. But many other people got it also. Nobody wrote to me about the second half. It either means that people don't listen to the second half or it was a little bit more obscure and they didn't get it. So I'm going to tell you anyway. It's from The Mentalist, a TV show that I've gotten into recently and happen to like very much. And we're wiping the slate clean. Those people who sent me emails will be getting CDs, courtesy of Noam Productions and the Israel Center. And the theme that you heard opening this show becomes this week's challenge. So please write to me at tt.ou.org if you could identify that particular theme. Emir Tzashem will start the second half of the show with a different one, and that will be the second part of the competition. Okay, business out of the way. Let's get to Chaye Sara. Well known, I don't know how well known, so whatever points we're able to cover, if you know them already, I apologize, make it a review. If you don't know it, then learn something new. There is a juxtaposition. In Hebrew, that's called smichut parshiot. When two portions are one right after the other, you learn from the connection. The immediately previous part of the Torah before the beginning of this week's portion of Chaye Sara is the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, where Avraham was told by God to take Yitzchak and to offer him as an offering on Har HaMoriah, a place where God will show him where it is. According to our tradition, that was the site of the Beit HaMikdash and a whole lot of other things as well. And I'm not going to go into the whole story, but the fact of the matter is we have sources that say that Sarah Imenu, mother Sarah, was told by the Satan, however you want to interpret that, not going to get into that one either, that what Avraham was planning on doing. Apparently he left with Yitzchak and donkey and two servants with him. According to our tradition, one was Eliezer and the other was his other son Yishmael. And they went off on this journey, and Sarah was told the purpose of the journey. So when she heard that at her age, which was 127 already, according to some opinions, she collapsed and died from the shock of her only son. Remember, it wasn't Avraham's only son, but it was her only son, which she had at the advanced age of 90 years old, was now being brought by his father to offer him on Har HaMoriah as a sacrifice. And this was too much for her, and she died. There are other opinions, one of which is a beautiful twist on this, and it fits what we've learned about Sarah and Avraham. When Sarah heard what was happening, she accepted it. This is the will of God, the command of God, and she knows not to question that. And she could live with that. What does she see? Avraham returning from this journey with Yitzchak. And what does she think? That he chickened out. That he wasn't able to, it's not a nice term to use, I take it back, that he wasn't able to carry out God's instructions, because of his love for Yitzchak. Avraham had already demonstrated when Sarah saw the bad influence of Yishmael in the house. I'm sorry. That comes... Yes. No, wait a minute. That already took place. So how could Yishmael have gone with Avraham? Let's leave that. Sarah says to Avraham, get rid of this boy and his mother. Avraham doesn't want to do that. It's his family. God says to Avraham, listen to what Sarah tells you. And Yishmael and mother, his mother Hagar were banished. Sarah knows how he felt about Yitzchak, and she was afraid, terribly, terribly afraid, that he wasn't able to carry out God's instructions, and that devastated her to the point where at her advanced age, she died. Two different opinions. Choose whichever one you like. Look around for others. But that is what we learn from the smichut parshiot, juxtaposition, of the beginning of Chayei Sarah with Akedat Yitzchak. Continuing now in the Sedra, Sarah dies in Kiryat Arba, Chevron, in Eretz Kena'an, and Avraham comes lispod lisarah, to eulogize Sarah, v'livkota. Two things we learn here are hesped, eulogizing, and grieving, crying. Interesting comment that has been made. The word v'livkota, and to cry for her, is spelled with a small kuf. When you write a Sefer Torah, all the letters are the regular size, except for certain ones that are extra large or extra small. Here's an extra small kuf in the word to cry for her. And some learn simply it means that when a person lived a full, long life, there isn't much crying to be done. There is more eulogizing. When a young person, unfortunately, is cut down short, there's a lot of crying, and perhaps there isn't a lot of eulogizing because the person has not yet done things which would be the topic of a stirring eulogy. There is another explanation, but let me save it for a little bit further when we get up to the Pasuk, and God blessed Avraham Bakol with everything. And what that means is discussed by our sources as well. Okay. Before that, after the funeral, so to speak, Avraham now has to tend to the burial. And for this, he turns to the locals, the people of Chet, and they know him, they like him, and they offer any burial plot, any parcel of land that he would like to have. He said, if it pleases you, and if I find favor in your eyes, I would like you to put me in contact with Ephron the Chittite. Ephron had a portion of land which he first offers to Avraham. Avraham says, I would not accept it as a gift. I'm willing to pay full price. To which Ephron responds, 400 silver pieces between friends. What's that? And Avraham in the Torah makes a point of saying that Avraham turns over the silver to Ephron and acquires Me'orat HaMachpelah, the burial cave, which according to tradition was where Adam and Eve were buried, according to the accounts in the Torah. Sarah was buried there, subsequently Avraham, then Yitzchak and Rivka, then Yaakov and Leah. Rachel was buried someplace else. So you have three patriarchs and three matriarchs, plus that original couple, Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve, who are buried in Me'orat HaMachpelah, and Avraham Avinu purchased, bought, pure, legal sale, the burial cave and the area around it, the surrounding area. Chevron and Kiryat Arba belong to the Jewish people by virtue of their purchase, not just by virtue of God saying, this is yours. That would be enough, but they also bought it. Our ancestor Avraham bought it. And Shabbat, Parshat Chayei Sarah, is traditionally Shabbat Chevron. Loads and loads of Jews from all over the country go to Chevron for Shabbat. Their population, Jewish population, swells tremendously because this is the Sedra that speaks of, not only speaks of Chevron, but speaks of the value to the Jewish people and to its history of Me'orat HaMachpelah, Kiryat Arba, and Chevron. Moving right along, we follow the portion of the acquisition of Me'orat HaMachpelah and its environs with the Torah's statement, V'Avraham Zaken. Avraham was old, Ba'bayamim, advanced in days, V'Hashem, and God, Berach et Avraham Bakol. Blessed Avraham Bakol, an important word to know. It means with everything, but many different opinions in our sources try to explain what special quality this Bakol has that Avraham was blessed by God Bakol. One interpretation, if you take the numeric value of the word Bakol, it's equal to the word ben, son. And Avraham's greatest blessing of all the things that he had was the fact that he fathered and Sarah gave birth to Yitzchak, his ben. I found an interesting play with numeric value, which I like to do with gematria. It's a little couple of steps, but it goes like this. First, let me explain that there is an opinion that Bakol means he had a son, and they indicate it as the numeric value of Bakol equal to that of Ben. This does not mean that this numeric equivalence proves that the blessing was Ben. We know that among many things that Avraham was blessed with, his son Yitzchak was greatest among them. So you don't need the numeric equivalent, but it adds a little nice touch. I'd like to go even further than that. Bakol and Ben are 52. 52 is also Eliyahu, Elijah the prophet. So far we have Bakol, numerically equals Ben, equals Eliyahu. Next step. We are told by our tradition that Eliyahu and Pinchas were the same person. A reincarnation, a holdover, I don't know how to explain it. But there are many sources that we have that say Pinchas was Eliyahu and Eliyahu was Pinchas. And there are people who are named Pinchas Eliyahu because of that. Pinchas is numerically equal to 208, which happens to be 4 times Ben. 4 times 52, 208, Pinchas. So now we have Bakol, 52, equals Ben 52, equals Eliyahu 52. Now we're not doing numeric value, we're doing instead the equivalence of the person. Pinchas is, Eliyahu is Pinchas, and now we got one more step with a numeric equivalent, and that is Yitzchak is also 208. Pinchas and Yitzchak are 28, and therefore with this chain of association, we've gone from Bakol to Yitzchak named. You like it? Fine. You don't like it? Sorry, I wasted your time. I like it as a game. I have to explain that. I don't believe that we prove things with gematria, with numeric value. but I believe that numeric value adds a certain dimension. I like to think of it as the icing on the cake or the cherry on top of a sundae or whatever you want to call it. Here, by the way, instead of a cherry on top of a sundae, the expression is a tzimuk, a raisin, put on top just to top something off. So you have statements that have their own value, mean something on their own, and when you have a nice little gematria to sew it up and just put a nice shine on the whole thing. Okay. Another opinion is that in addition to Yitzchak, which the Torah tells us straight off, Bakol, he was blessed with all, even a daughter. And that Avraham Avinu had a daughter from Sarah. We don't know much about her. I guess we don't know anything about her, except there's an opinion that her name was Bakol. And we have a tradition that she died at the same time that Sarah did. And that brings us back to that word, vilivkota. Avraham comes to eulogize Sarah, vilivkota. Another way that the small and large letters in the Torah scroll are analyzed is by removing them from the word and seeing if the word makes sense without that letter. If you take out the little kaf from vilivkota, the sentence now reads, and Avraham came to eulogize Sarah, Ulavita, and her daughter. That is a remez, a hint, a clue-level understanding. It is not pshat. Pshat is the plain meaning of the verse. The plain meaning of the verse is, he came to eulogize Sarah and cry. On a different level, and the Torah is learned and understood on many different levels, they say that might indicate a daughter. Interesting third opinion. He was blessed by not having a daughter. Now, I, as a father of three daughters, take exception to that, but in Avraham's case, in his time, in his condition, maybe a daughter wouldn't have been such a good idea. And therefore, it's like a bracha, a blessing, that he had only a son, but not a daughter. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Chayei Sarah. We just heard the TV theme that opened the second half of the show, and if you have the ability to identify it, please email me at tt@ou.org. Okay, we have given a couple of explanations offered by some of the commentaries as to the meaning of the word Bakol, as in God blessed Avraham Bakol. There are a few others. I don't know if we should get into them now, because there are other ideas in the Sedra that I would like to explore. I'll just briefly mention, some say it was prestige among the people of the area in which he lived, and some say it was a precious stone that had curative powers, and people visited him to be cured. He had the power of astrology, and that's a topic that we'll touch upon in a little while. And some say it was the repentance of Yishmael, still in Avraham's lifetime, that we'll call it Jewish nachas for Avraham Avinu. And some say that Esav, who later became a wicked person, did not sin during Avraham's lifetime and began his career, we'll call it, as a wicked individual only after Avraham's death, so he was spared. Avraham was spared that terrible feeling he would have had with Esav, his grandson, one of his grandsons. Okay, enough said. maybe not, but we'll move on. The next theme in the Sedra is, takes up the bulk of the Sedra, and that is after mourning Sarah and finding a burial place for her, the next and final task of Avraham Avinu, as opposed to Avraham, the person, private citizen, if you want to use that expression, but Avraham Avinu, our father Abraham, the patriarch of the Jewish nation, the next step is finding a suitable bride for his son Yitzchak. No matter what Avraham did in this world, no matter how great his personal discovery of one God, his relationship with God, his whole personality, many of the things that we are, we attribute and associate to Avraham Avinu, that would all mean nothing if he did not have a spiritual heir to pass this down to. And that is through Yitzchak, and in order to continue that which Avraham Avinu started, that with which we, the Jewish people, these thousands of years later, are continuing, has to be the right shidduch, the right wife for Yitzchak, and that's Avraham's final task. For the task at hand, Avraham calls his trusted servant Eliezer, who he administers an oath to. Eliezer swears to carry out Avraham's instructions and wishes faithfully, and Avraham sends him back to his hometown, to his family there, to find the right woman for Yitzchak. Eliezer takes 10 camels laden with all kind of goodies and gifts, and he sets out to Avraham's hometown, arrives there, and realizes he doesn't have a clue as to how he is supposed to go about this task. Yitzchak, by the way, was forbidden to leave the land of Canaan. He had been consecrated on the altar, and it would not be appropriate for him to go outside the country, that which becomes Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, Eliezer is being sent as an agent for Avraham and Yitzchak. When he gets there, it's towards evening. He's at the well, or the spring, or the wellspring. And it's the time where the young maidens of the population come to draw water for the evening. And he says to God, I'm asking for a favor. These are my own words. The girl who will offer me to drink and also to water my camels, which is no small task, she will be the one that you have designated to be the suitable bride for my master's son, for Yitzchak. The Torah tells us no sooner had he finished these words when Rivka, the daughter of Betuel, who was the son of Milcah and Nahor, Avraham's brother, comes out with a pitcher, a water pitcher on her shoulders, and on her shoulder, I guess, and he asks, can I have something to drink? And she tips the pitcher and gives him to drink and says, I will also draw water for your camels. He turns heavenward and he thanks God for fulfilling his wish, fulfilling his sign. The Gemara, the Talmud, says that there were three people in the Bible who asked things of God not properly. They were improper in the way they worded their petitions. And two of them were answered favorably, and one was answered not favorably. The first one was Eliezer Eved Avraham, servant of Avraham, who inappropriately said, if a girl will offer me to drink and water my camels, that's the one. Who did he, how did he know it would be the right one, the suitable one? In fact, getting back to the verses themselves, the Torah tells us that as soon as she offered and fulfilled the words of his sign, he gave her jewelry, and then it even feels like almost as an afterthought, he said, by the way, who are you? And when she told him who she was, and he realized that that was from the family of Avraham, then he turns to God again with words of thanks and bows before God. When he's telling the story over in Rivka's house, he realizes, at least this is one understanding of the flow of the verses, he realizes that he would come across as kind of an idiot if he told the story in the exact sequence that it happened. So he said to her, to them, he tells them the story, and he said, and when she gave me the water and offered water for my camels as well, I asked her who she was, and when I found out that she was from Avraham's family, I gave her these gifts. That would make more sense. It also would take away a little bit of the improperness, impropriety, of the way that he asked God for this. I gave a shiur earlier this week, and I told the one of the famous genie jokes. It's sort of a whole genre of jokes, but they all come from the same thing. You have to be careful how you word things. It's the one of the genie who gave this guy who owned a candy store one wish, and the guy said, I never have time to take a vacation, I'm always too busy in the store, and can't get away because I have nobody to take my place. And the genie said, it shall be done, and he gave him tickets to go down to Florida and took over the soda fountain in the candy store, and until the guy got back. And sure enough, a guy comes in and said, he said, genie says, what'll it be? And he says, make me a malted. And he went, poof, you're a malted. Now there's a whole bunch of jokes. Some of them are not too nice, and some of them are okay, and some are funny, and some are not as funny. But it all revolves around, you gotta be careful what you ask for. Make me a malted has two meanings. It means, put milk and ice cream and malt and mix it up, and I'll have it with a straw. It also means turn me into a malted, which of course he didn't mean, but that's what the genie did. So getting back to Eliezer, the criticism in the Talmud is that he didn't qualify what he asked for, and he could have ended up with a cripple, a blind person, a totally unsuitable person, not someone from the family, and God answered him properly anyway. The second person it tells about is Shaul HaMelech, King Saul. When the Israelites were facing the Plishtim, the Philistine army, and their champion, the giant Goliath, Goliath, challenged the Jews to send out someone to fight against him, and that would settle the battle, it was difficult to find anyone. People panicked. And the offer that was made was, the person who will slay this Goliath shall have great riches from the king and the king's daughter as a wife. It turned out that it was David, King David, future King David, totally suitable for the job, but it could have been a disaster. And the language in the Talmud is it could have been a slave or a mamzer, and yet God answered it properly, even though the wording wasn't well done, and David HaMelech. The third example is the negative one, and that's the famous story of Yiftach, Jephthah in English, where Yiftach was facing a battle against Bnei Ammon, and he said to God, I swear that when I successfully return from this battle, thanks to you, I will offer as a sacrifice the first thing that emerges from my house. He was expecting it to be a cow, a goat, a sheep, all things worthy for the altar. And the Talmud says, how did he know? It could have been a dog. It could have been a pig. And actually it turned out to be his daughter, which is a very problematic portion of that passage in the Navi. And I don't want to get too much into that, although I can say a few things about it now. I've never really understood it, since Judaism has a concept that an oath has to be compatible between your mouth and your heart. In other words, if you say something, even if you're not saying it, if you're not saying it carefully, and it could be totally misunderstood or misinterpreted, you're not bound by that. It was just a wrong thing to say. So, not going into a whole discussion about Yiftach and his daughter. Jephthah's daughter, by the way, is the title of the first Naomi Reagan novel. Anyway, side point. But the idea is that a person has to ask properly. And the Talmud criticizes Eliezer for not asking properly, but he lucked out, God was with him, and gave him the suitable bride for Yitzchak. Now the Rambam takes it further and considers what Eliezer did, because it was not properly asked, to be a form of nichush, which is relying on signs and omens, which is forbidden by Torah law. Now this becomes related a little to astrology, but I want to hold that off, and hopefully I'll have time towards the end of the show to discuss it a little bit. But let's continue with the narrative. There is intrigue in the house of Rivka. Lavan, her brother, has his own ulterior motives for what's going on. And Betuel, the father, is there at the beginning, and then he disappears from the scene, and commentaries say, based on sources, that he died during that experience, and some attribute it to being poisoned accidentally by Lavan, who was attempting to poison Eliezer, so that Avraham, through Yitzchak, should not continue. And that's where we establish Lavan as a conniver, and worse, and that carries through to his relationship later with Yaakov Avinu as well. In any event, there are two things that are sort of surprising from this episode in the house of Rivka. One of them is when Eliezer says, I want her to come with me now. And they say, well, it's the custom around here for a young girl who's being married off to stay 10 months to a year with her family. And Eliezer says, no, I want to take her now. Lavan says, let's ask her. The Talmud says, from here we learn that you can't marry off a girl without her acknowledgement and permission. So, the astonishing thing is that this is a lesson that came from Lavan. You know, when we learn things from God's behavior or from Avraham's behavior, then we say these are things we should emulate. And here the Talmud is saying, from here, what Lavan said, we learn something. Later, when Lavan, in the name of his family, gives a blessing to Rivka, this becomes a blessing that fathers give their daughters at their weddings for hundreds and hundreds of years. And it came from Lavan. Jump ahead in the Torah to Parshat Balak, where you have Bilam Harasha, the wicked Bilam, who uttered things which are so beautiful, one sentence of which has been incorporated in our prayers every day, adorns many synagogues around the world, Matovu Ohalecha Yaakov Mishkanotecha Yisrael. How goodly are the tents of Jacob and the tabernacles of Israel. Very nice. It came from Bilam Harasha. But it came from his mouth, but it came from God. In any event, that's something I think of note in Parshat Chayei Sarah. Eliezer does take Rivka with him back to Yitzchak. They find Yitzchak communing with God in the field towards evening. We attribute the origin of Mincha, davening of Mincha in the afternoon, to Yitzchak Avinu. And Yitzchak takes Rivka into his mother's tent, and he is now consoled for the loss of his mother and has found the next mother of the Jewish people, Rivka Imenu. Let's take a break before we talk about astrology and play a wedding song in honor of the marriage between Yitzchak and Rivka. And I guess we could add what happens later in the Sedra when Avraham marries Keturah. Some say that she was Hagar, that he took back after Sarah had died. And there's a wedding also. Whatever it is, it calls for wedding music, and you shall not be disappointed. Okay, I needed to keep it short. That was Nigun Simcha, a joyous melody by Lipa. A couple of words about astrology, and I say this because the commentaries say Avraham was an astrologer, but he was told that Israel, Jewish people, Torah people, have the ability to rise above their mazal, their zodiac, their horoscope. And that means we cannot rely on that because it would be shortchanging our belief in God. In other words, we can't really get into the whole thing now, even if there is something to astrology and the fate of individuals or peoples can be told in the stars, we are not allowed to play with that. We're not allowed to study that. We're not allowed to predict that. Because it shows a lack of this honest faith that we need to have with God. Tamim tihya im Hashem Elokecha. Be straightforward with God. And especially since we are not bound by whatever destiny there is, we each have the ability to change that. Plus the fact that Eliezer with the sign, with the omen, talks also about, the commentaries, and the way Shulchan Aruch is set up, it leads into astrology as well. Either astrology is nonsense, in which case it would be folly to play with it, or there's something to it, in which case we're forbidden to rely on it. We can't act upon a horoscope reading. I'm not talking even about what you find in the newspapers. I'm talking about a serious horoscope reading, not for us, not for the Jewish people. Other nations dabble in that. That's their business. We rise above this. And about the only thing left in astrology that maybe has something are the character traits that are associated with people born at a certain time of year, a certain month, under certain signs, with the configuration of the planets, whatever. And that does not mean that a person is destined to stay a certain way. If it means a person is stubborn, or he angers quickly, or he's bloodthirsty, there are plenty of good things you could do with even negative traits, and certainly with good traits, and that's our challenge, and that's what we have to be busy with, not with playing around with omens and astrological readings, etc., etc. On that note, Shabbat Shalom, Lehish Tameah.